back, everyone. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 30 of the Art Scene Podcast. Today's guest is Brock Brake, co-owner of Part 2 Gallery in Oakland and curator at First Amendment Gallery in San Francisco. But before we get into our conversation, I want to highlight a few things to check out this weekend at some of the bigger institutions here in the Bay Area. Over at SF MoMA, their newest summer blockbuster show, Rene Magritte, the fifth season, just opened a couple weeks ago. The show is the first to look exclusively at Magritte's late career from the 1940s to the 1960s. The show will be up till October, so check it out if you're visiting San Francisco for the summer. And just around the corner from the SF MoMA, the Museum of African Diaspora, or MOAD for short, has a show up titled After the Thrill is Gone, which features 14 artists who locate fashion as a political language and reinterpret the historical terrain of South Africa after the thrill of apartheid's end is gone. The exhibition runs till August 26th, so check it out if you're in town, and if you have time afterwards, cross the street over to the California Historical Society, where one of the PSTLA LA shows from this past fall is on exhibit. Titled Murales Rebeldes, LA Chicano Murals Under Siege, the show highlights murals that were either censored, neglected, or destroyed. Lastly, it is the last weekend to see Wei Bay, an exhibition that features nearly 200 works that represent 200 years of art in the Bay Area, cutting across time periods, media, styles, and cultures. Now onto my conversation with Brock, in which we discuss his skateboarding and photojournalistic background and his introduction to the fine art world, as well as all the current work he does at both Part 2 and First Amendment galleries. Enjoy. It's nice to sit down with you, man. Thank you. I've heard so much about you from Musée, who have had on here before. Your name comes up a lot, too, whenever I look up stuff that's going on at First Amendment Gallery. Cool. You know, and then Musée connect the dots for me, like, sure, that you're also the same guy over here at Part 2 Gallery. Yep. So yeah, and from what I heard, you know, you have a lot of irons in the fire. I mean, you do a lot of stuff around here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Not, you know, we're in Oakland right now at Part 2 Gallery, but you also do stuff at First Amendment, which is in San Francisco.
Correct. Yeah.
And you know, I even like saw that you even have a blog on occasion, like on your website.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't updated that in a minute, but yeah, I do try to stay on top of like everything that's kind of going on with the arts culture in the Bay Area.
And you know, I'm curious of like all the things that you are, that you do, you know, which is the one that you started doing first, I guess, when you're coming into, sure, the art scene.
Sure.
Let's start from the very beginning. Let's start like where you're from and stuff.
Cool. So I am from a very small town in Ohio called Marysville, Ohio, Union County. It's about like an hour outside of Columbus. Basically, it's a very, very small town where you either work in the farms or you work at like the Honda car factory. That's like 30 minutes, 40 minutes outside of town.
Wow.
So growing up, you know, I didn't have a lot of culture. I didn't have like graffiti and like, you know, a lot of the music venues and museums and, you know, some of the stuff that people would take for granted, I guess, on a weekly basis. I didn't have a lot of that growing up. So it was me and my friends skateboarding in the garage or getting kicked out of like the video rental spot for skating behind there. And then eventually I just kind of like the skateboard culture got me to Chicago, and through skateboarding and going to college for photography with like a focus in photojournalism, I started to meet a lot of different graffiti writers and people like that that kind of were, you know, down to like let me go out with them late night and like lurk in the streets and like, you know, run away from the cops and all that fun stuff. And so I got to spend time documenting a lot of those people, which then progressed, you know, into them getting into galleries and recognition from people, you know, outside of the streets and stuff like that.
Well, what made you go to Chicago? I mean, I guess like, what, yeah, did your parents do, for instance? Because I mean, it sounds like, yeah, you didn't get any influence from there. They weren't very artistic minded.
I mean, my parents didn't go to college. Like, I was the first one in my family on both parents' sides to graduate from school. You know, my mom works as a bank manager, or I got a credit union or something like that. And my dad works at like a Bull Semen dispensary.
No way.
Yeah. So like they, you know, harvest. He works in the cold room, and basically he just works in liquid nitrogen.
They still do
freezes
that.
Yeah. They've been doing it all their jobs for like 20 plus years.
Wow.
So like, you know, and then like my uncles, they work at like the car factories or like at Nestle's.
Yeah.
My aunt's been like a manager at like a doctor's office, like a, sure, primary care unit for however long, you know.
Well, what made you go move out and go to Chicago? I mean, you said you mentioned the skateboarding culture.
It was skateboarding, pretty much.
It was just like, to go skateboarding, or
well, like just to get outside of like Ohio.
Yeah,
because like all my family lives in Ohio. Like I have my cousins; they all live with their parents, and they're in their 20s and 30s. Like, you know, I just was like always kind of a black sheep of the family. Like, you know, I was like the first one to get arrested, you know, and get in trouble with the law. I was the one that like eventually got a bunch of tattoos and, you know, all that stuff. I was the kid that skateboarded and, you know, people were driving by yelling at us like when we're in front of our parents' house. So I just never really fit in. In high school, I hung out with like a bunch of outcast kids. Like I had my best friends were like a goth couple that hung out with us all the time, like a Division I state wrestler, a kid that was like a nationally ranked bowling champion, had like 300 rings and stuff.
That's a very eclectic group of friends.
You know, and just like a couple skaters and like the one black kid in town, like the one Asian kid in town were like my friends. Like, so, you know, it was just kind of like this weird group of people that didn't really fit in Marysville, Ohio.
Yeah.
And so I always had the urge to kind of get out and just see other places. So it was like, all right, high school's wrapping up. You know, I'm about to turn 18. It's either New York, Chicago, or California. In California, I don't know anyone because, like, you know, I'm from Ohio and my family's all here. New York's kind of like just like whatever. You know, it's like everybody's there and it's super just kind of crazy. I just don't know if, you know, I'm up for that. And then Chicago was like, oh, it's like 6-7 hours away from home. You know, the weather's pretty, like, I'm used to it. I know that there's a strong skateboard community there. And I was just like, all right, well, let's give it a shot. Like, you know, photography. At this time, I was starting to, like, really start watching Fecal Face, which is the gallery that was in San Francisco. So, like, throughout high school, I was watching all that kind of stuff. And that's when I started getting more and more into the arts, following John Tripp's, like, daily blogs and his interviews with like Mike Giant and Jeremy Fish and going to openings at White Walls and stuff. So I was like, well, maybe like Chicago will have some of that.
Yeah.
And so I go and, you know.
And did you, when you went, did you go like for instance, did you go because you were already going to a school or like, or you just went before you even thought about college?
I had a girlfriend at the time and she was like, I went to like Wright State University, which is like a state school for like a quarter. And I was just like, holy shit, like, I can't do this dorm life. Like,
yeah,
it's just like a bunch of rednecks and like other people. I'm just like, holy shit, like, this is not me. So this girl I was dating at the time, she was like, well, you know, I did apply for a school in Chicago, but I went to Dayton, you know, so we could work things out between us or whatever. And so eventually we both were like, well, let's try this out. So we went to Chicago, visited it. You know, they had really great facilities. It was right downtown. It was exciting, you know, right by the trains and, you know, it was right by the water.
Yeah.
And so it was just really beautiful. And it was just like, all right, well, you know, this sounds like a good starting point.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, it's not New York. It's not California, but it's like, it's a good place for me to get my feet wet coming from like, you know, the suburbs of being surrounded by like farm fields and corn and stuff. So,
yeah. And photography was your focus is what it seemed like at this point.
Yeah.
And did that start in Ohio and then gradually you just took it to the next level over when you came to Chicago?
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where like I hung out with a lot of the older kids. Oh, I always did. And so when you're skating, you know, there's like obviously the older kids are going to be better and all that. So I started to pick up like, the camera and the video camera and was documenting those guys skating. And so I was doing that a lot in high school. And then that kind of progressed into like, oh, like I can document like other things. And then, you know, I went to school, started taking classes, like got my into photojournalism, which I thought was really exciting because it's like you have to be like really quick, you have to be good, you know, you have to like timely, you have unique assignments and, you know, it's just different every day. So I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And so I started basically in like my sophomore year started taking like freelance assignments for like the local paper that turned into like doing freelance stuff for the Chicago Tribune at like the music festivals like Pitchfork and Lollapalooza and like whatever rave stuff.
Yeah.
So I was documenting a lot of that stuff and it was just like kind of like addicting, like all my friends are partying and stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go take on this assignment like for like this movie premiere or like to go watch like the mayor talk or whatever. So that kind of really was like, oh, like there's stuff outside of like the world that I was used to in Ohio. And so I started getting more and more into that. And then, you know, at the same time, I was still going out on the weekends and at night with, like, these kids getting into trouble, like, documenting them, you know, doing what they do, which brought a lot of eyes. You know, I started at that time, it was, like, Juxtapose was posting a lot of, like, images of the kids. I was documenting their walls, you know, a lot of just, like, different websites and stuff. So I started to kind of, like, learn how to do promotion and, like, PR, kind of grassroots, just promoting my friends. And
well, and tell me a little bit about Juxtapose, you know, for listeners that don't know, like, sure. what was it, what kind of stuff were they posting that appealed to you? Like, what were they into?
So, like, basically they're posting a lot of just, like, the graffiti heads. So, like, Amuse126, my friend Snacky, there was a graffiti crew, KWT2NR, that was getting a lot of love in Chicago at the time.
Yeah.
Dirty,
so a lot of street art, like
what street was art, street? Like, I mean, it was like straight up just like graffiti, like people bombing on someone's thing, like with like a train going by or something.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And then, so how long did you stay in Chicago after school and continue to just do photojournalism?
So I started sophomore year doing more freelance, and then by junior year I was pretty much working like as like a reporter for the school paper, the freelance for like the Red Eye Tribune, freelance for Time Out Chicago. So I spent like, while I was still in school, I was acting as like a working professional pretty much.
Yeah.
Taking on assignments, and I was kind of bad at like going to class. I would always kind of be like, hey, like I would really love to like sit through this critique, but like, do you mind if I go shoot like this guy's press conference really quick and like I can show you my photos next class or something when it's like in the paper?
It must be crazy too, because like I studied photography as an undergrad, and just to think that someone in my class is like a pro. Like, it's like, why are you even in this class at this point?
I mean, it's weird because it's like the photos were good and I was getting the attention, but like, you know, it's still not like a very well paid career.
Yeah.
So like I got to learn early on that I was like, by the time I graduated, I was like, I can't do this shit. It's like I'm making like, you know, they're trying to like give me like $40 an assignment or something. I'm doing like three a day, and it's like I'm not like trying to get like my gas paid and like other stuff, and it's just like I was just getting beat. And so I got to learn really, and I was, you know, I got to do Lollapalooza like three or four times and Pitchfork and all these things. And so, you know, I had a pretty quick but good life as a photojournalist.
Yeah.
And then I pretty much, by the time I graduated in 2012, by that October, August, I was out. I was on my way to California.
What made you come out here? Because you've never been out here before.
Sure.
What made you go from Chicago to San Francisco? And why not New York, which is closer, I would assume, than San Francisco?
So, I mean, like, I did do, like, a road trip, skate trip with, like, it was, like, half skaters and, like, half graffiti heads. And we, like, all went and got, like, a couple Airbnbs and basically just, like, posted up in San Francisco for, like, a week. And so we got to skate and go out and cause trouble and drink and have all the good times and stuff and see the sights. And I was like, wow, like I could like really see myself like being here more. Like, this is like, it's not a big city, but it is. It's got nature, you know, everybody's way more relaxed. There's culture, there's arts. A lot of people that I was interested in, again, Pico Face kind of like hyped it up super hard for me early on, to where I was just like, you know, the Bay Area was always kind of on my mind.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated, a few friends of mine from Chicago were like, oh, well, we want to move out to Oakland and grow, and you can live in our grow house for cheap. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so, you know, I did that, and it was, like, super, super hot and super sketchy, and you're not allowed to bring, like, anyone home and stuff. And so...
And what do you mean by grow house? You mean...
Like, weed. Like, they just straight up got, like, a five-bedroom, like, house. Like, it was actually, like, up the street, like, from here.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they just like straight up set up shop in like these rooms, and I'm living in one of them, and they're like in the other ones, and then there's like hundreds of plants in these other ones. And yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like I had a affordable way to like transplant basically all my life. And I did that for like a few months, and then I was just like, this enough. And I finally had met more people out here, was able to find like a new living situation, new jobs, and all that stuff. And yeah, so I mean, when I moved out here, I had a lot of artists telling me to work with, they're like, go find Justin at White Walls and, you know, you go work with him. And cause at this point I was doing like starting to help with installations and murals and stuff for other art traveling artists.
Yeah. Coming through Chicago. I wanted to ask you that. Cause like when did you like, you know, you're going to school, you're doing some freelance photography,
sure.
and, you know, doing photojournalism. At what point were you, like, all of a sudden, like, helping doing installs? You're kind of, like, helping
with, like... It was kind of blended, man. It was, like, the same time.
Yeah, like, it was, like, all started in Chicago, and you kind of just carried it over here.
All in Chicago, yeah. Yeah. So, like, there was a really great... I had found a mentor early on through the graffiti thing, this guy, Nick Marzullo, who ran this program called Pawnwork Chicago. And he was just like... You know, he's like, if you want to help, help. Like, I'm not going to stop you.
Yeah.
And so he kind of just, like, you know, started hitting me up. He knew I took photos. He would send them out and help me get press and send stuff out in exchange. Like, I was just always there to lend a hand.
Yeah.
Sitting on the conversations, you know, that's when I started to really appreciate a lot of the dialogue that I had with a lot of the people traveling.
Yeah.
Because then it's kind of like you really start to learn, like, what these people like and don't like and how they operate and, like, how unique of a experience it really is to work with these people. And I did that for like a year and a half while I was doing the photojournalism stuff. And, you know, at the same time we had a DIY collective where we had like a huge skate ramp in Chicago that was like 20 feet wide, like 4 feet tall on one side. We had parties and shows and art shows. And so it was just kind of like a really engaging, like, the community was like my last couple years in Chicago was like, you know, really unique in the sense that, like, Chicago is very clicky with its skateboarders. And so there was, like, you know, the dirty kids, like the hip hop kids, the shot, like the kids that are flow and sponsored and stuff. There's like the kids like the punk kids. And so at this venue, we, like, through arts and skateboarding and music, we, like, basically broke all those barriers, and, like, all these fools are hanging out. And, you know, it kind of changed the skateboard community in Chicago a little bit, yeah. Honestly. Like, you started having a lot of people that would be, like, snob-nosed at each other, hanging out, drinking, smoking, and, like, skating together. And that was really, like, kind of a more inspiring thing than I realized at the time. And so when I left Chicago, I kind of, like, took that sense of community and building and kind of was able to implement it through the arts and stuff. But
yeah. So when you come out here, are you still primarily focused on urban street art, like that kind of scene? Because, you know, the reason why, and we'll get to it in a little bit, is because the work that you do over at First Amendment is a little bit different here.
Yeah.
And you kind of are, you have one foot in the street art scene, but you have one foot in what's kind of like the traditional art scene. How did you now get in touch and start with First Amendment Gallery? Because you're the curatorial director there.
Yeah, right. So I curate and I direct over there, and then I curate and direct over here. And basically, when I was at F&B, I was still working for, like, at that time when we first started in, like, 2015, I was doing this, but I was also helping out at, like, Miras Gallery in San Francisco, and just kind of doing random photo stuff for, like, different people, like Gauntlet Gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did some photo stuff for, like, 111 Minna. So, like, I was still, like, and I always have been just kind of always floating around trying to learn as much as I can from other places and yeah. things like that. But yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, how did you go from being basically like you were doing photo work for them to then slowly you started like curating shows and yeah. like and getting people together to have group shows and whatnot?
Like, so, like, the first show I curated ever was at F&B. And yeah. then at that, when I was at F&B, I was like, well, I really want to blend this, like, fine art kind of vibe yeah. and this like more street art graffiti vibe and make it work, because there was a lot of street artists and graffiti artists that I've been working with, and it's just kind of well known now that a lot of the people that kind of started out as that don't want to be involved with that anymore.
Yeah.
There's some weird taboo about it to where, like, you know, it's street art and graffiti has been kind of a bad word inside of a gallery setting for a while for a lot of people. So, you know, I was trying to work with breaking that barrier a bit, and we did pretty well for while we were at F&B, you know, and we did do that, and we were able to kind of help people become more of like fine artists or whatever you want to call it. But then when we closed, I had the opportunity, well, I guess even before we closed, I started working at First Amendment about like a little over a year ago. And the idea was just, you know, I was like, wow, I can really, like, even play more with, like, the public art side of things with mm-hmm. First Amendment and kind of change F&B a little bit. Because at this point, I had been curating for about 2 years. You know, when I first moved out here, like, I didn't know what, like, a Robert Rauschenberg was or, like, you know, I really didn't, I didn't really have, like, an art history knowledge at all. And so I'm just going off of whatever I see, like, online and Juxtapose and my peers and whoever I've worked with. And so, like, the real learning experience started after school and once I moved out here, because then I was working with a handful of different artists that were like, yo, like, you don't know who, like, so-and-so is? Like, yeah. What the fuck? Like, I'm just like, yeah, man, I don't know. I'm from Ohio. Like, didn't have a lot of this growing up.
Yeah, like, the people you're hanging out here with expose you to a little bit more.
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, also just, like, picking up books, man. Like, once I was in school in Chicago, I was just like, I picked up an Abaddon book, and I was just like, yes, like, this is what I'm kind of looking for. It's like, and then I just kept picking up more and more books, and so that's why I have, like, a fairly large collection of them.
Yeah. Now.
And then I feel like that's what really kind of still inspires me, is to, like, keep learning, and that's why I'm over at Gagosian doing their art handling. You know, I'm doing stuff for just more of the higher blue chip galleries and stuff like that when they need me. But it's just so that way I can keep learning. Like, it's like a weird game. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to win this thing. And I don't think any of the artists really will either.
No.
But it is really cool to be like, well, instead of like, well, everybody else is like sleeping and waking up, like, I'm going to go run my dog and then like read a book for a little bit and then like go to work and like do what I do.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to do it. I mean, anybody who thinks that they're done learning is like,
it's so funny.
The whole world's going to pass you by. Like, you got to always quick. Keep. Yeah.
Real quick.
So you. We worked at 8th and B, then you started working a little bit doing, and now you're the curatorial director at First Amendment. At what point, because from what I understand, 8th and B is not operating anymore, but it's kind of now this is part two, right? Part two gallery. You know, and I mentioned it before, I'm curious, and you mentioned a little bit, you were trying to mix the two, you're trying to create this crossover between street art and what's considered fine art, and you still do the street art stuff at First Amendment.
Sure.
But now here, and some of the people that you've shown here have shown at First Amendment, but here it's a lot of, at least so far, there's solo shows and group shows and their paintings and prints. Mm-hmm. What got you to like do that? Like, I mean, eventually I'm assuming you probably mix it up again, but so far it's been solely, you know, quote unquote fine art here.
Yeah. I mean, so like the goal is like having two different places is to kind of like, separate it a bit. You know, it'd be a fool to ignore all the dialogue I've had with artists in terms of affiliations and, you know, how they kind of perceive working with different galleries and the artists they work with prior.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to be really, really self-aware that, like, you know, if I start bringing in a lot of people that are working in the public arts, I'm not going to be able to get X amount of people or these artists that I really would like to work in this environment. Just simply based off affiliation. Like, they might be friends and super cool with one another, but, like, there's still this weird wall that's there that, like, no one sees. And so, you know, I have to kind of, like, outside of just working with the people that I like and, like, doing the things that, like, I think work well together, I still have to be really in tune of, like, how my other artists and people that I'm working with are going to feel about it. You know, I care more about what they think than what a majority of other people have to say.
Yeah.
I don't have friends that aren't with, I'm not friends with anyone that's not an artist, basically, which is really lame to say, but like, I don't have a lot of friends, but all the ones I do are people that I pretty much work with. So I don't have a large net of people I talk to a lot.
And, you know, what do you foresee? Because, I mean, you're so involved in both sides of the bay right now. Like, what do you foresee doing other types of projects? I mean, you seem so, like, willing to take on these new endeavors. Mm-hmm. You know, like, is there anything else other than the two galleries? Or do you foresee yourself, like, just working on those two for, like, a while? Or, like, doing curatorial work and gallery work? Do you see any, like, interaction with, like, a little bit more with the community, like, community projects and stuff? Like, kind mm-hmm. of what, like, YBCA does or something like that at that level?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm 28. I've been doing this for about 3 years, curating shows, but I've been working in this community for about 10. And I honestly have no idea what I'm going to be doing, man. I didn't know that this gallery that we're sitting in now was going to be here at the beginning of December.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's a great gallery space, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't know that, you know, I'd be closing my gallery at Athen-B in January. Yeah. You know, there's just like a lot of unforeseen things that are happening. So it's really just a matter of like how I decide to play ball with it.
Yeah.
I would love to just be able to focus on the two projects for now. The goal is definitely growth. Just getting people to know that we're here. You know, I have a lot of people that I'm working with at First Amendment that are like, let me show up part two. And it's hard because it's like, I have this idea or this thing that I just need to like play out for a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, my goal ideally would be to like, grow this. This is like, I'm settled here for a couple years at part two.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally I would like to grow First Amendment more, like basically the programming for this year, you know, or I guess next year is primarily going to be all local solos. Not a lot of out of town. I'm really going to try to play to what's important in the Bay Area at the moment. And I think that's supporting a lot of the local talents. But eventually, like, you know, I want to get to LA. I would love to do something in this kind of stature and this kind of like vibe for First Amendment in LA and part two. But, you know, it's going to take X amount of sales and X amount of exhibitions to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, so I was going to ask you about that, about the like, you know, I don't think I've been able to ask anybody from the ground up the process of wanting to open up a gallery to making it happen, finding the space, especially in this area, Bay Area, where it's just, you know, that we all, the stories are all over the place about how high the rent is and whatever.
Definitely.
Like, tell me a little bit of like how you decided this is what I want to do. And then how you actually did it. Like, I can't even begin if I wanted to open a gallery or to start.
I mean, I honestly had, I didn't really know what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like, I worked at White Walls for an X amount of time. And that guy kind of dropped the ball pretty hard for a lot of people. So, you know, it's hard not to learn a ton when you're working for someone that's messing up so hard.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, tell me, like, what do you mean? Like, so White Wall's another gallery that existed
here? That was in San Francisco. It was White Wall Shooting Gallery. I mean, you can look up articles on KQED and, like, a bunch of other places. But basically, this guy, Justin, just, like, fucked a lot of people over and didn't pay people. A lot of people were owed a good amount of money to where they had to get legal help and you know, eventually that kind of all closed. Some people got paid, some people didn't.
Yeah.
He moved on to Portland or whatever. He's hiding up in the mountains. You know, people are like, I guess Portland still released like a newspaper article. Like, people are on him. Like, it's very savage on social media when you look up his stuff. So I mean, I learned a ton from that guy just messing up. And, you know, I'm pretty much always take something from whenever I do something, something away. And so, you know, I learned in that case not how to run a gallery. And that's kind of where it kind of, I got the first glimpse of like how I want to do it. And then I was working for a gallery that was in the space before Athen-B in Oakland. The owners broke up. The one guy that had like a agreement with the print shop in the back, he's like, I got this space for X amount of time. Like, do you want to do this? I was like, yeah, let's try it. You know, the first show we did like 20-30K in sales or something. And it was just like, oh shit, like this might actually like work. And then after that, it was just kind of like, I'm going to curate a show every month and I'm just going to keep doing it until we don't do it. And then it turned into being like, couple years. And so it was just steady progression of just like totally just going off of my taste and like who I think I can work with and things like that. So if I didn't have that initial space, like my partner's agreement in place to where we didn't have to pay rent for X amount of time, it would have been definitely a lot harder. But you know, we got grants, we worked with VSCO, we did a lot of like community projects and stuff where we got a good amount of funds. And then the art sales were picking up. And so it was just kind of like trial by error, you know. I worked really hard. You know, I put the exhibitions together. I was in charge of doing all the photos and the website, the social media, press outreach, making sure the shit's going to get here in time.
Yeah, I was gonna ask like if you had a team.
Shows,
I mean, like, I came in here today. Yeah. I mean, you're by yourself, like working on stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I usually, my partner would be there when he could. You know, he had kids and a wife, and you know, they would show up late night or like nighttime.
Yeah.
But you know, I mostly have a lot of it done by then, or it would be super crunch time, and he might have to help me hang a few pieces while I'm like editing hundreds of images for the show page.
Yeah.
Because like I just don't usually put one image up. I usually put like five.
Yeah.
And that takes a bit of time to edit and shoot. On top of just like getting the artist to finish it before the show. So, you know, I took on a lot of that responsibility. So it kind of like if I was like, well, if we're going to do this show and my name's on it, it's not going to be shitty.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of late nights and, you know, angry calls from my wife at 1 a.m. and things like that. But it was totally worth it because it kind of forced me to go through this weird boot camp for X amount of time to where like, you know, I'm going to have all this show probably hung in like 2 hours after you leave. And there's still like a grip of stuff to put D-rings on and clean up. But I've kind of become this like weird machine where I can kind of, I just have like a system.
Yeah.
And that definitely carries on to like the exhibitions I do. Like I have a very strict regimen in terms of like taking shows down and putting up shows. But like,
yeah,
you know, you should see some of the emails I send my artists being like, well, here's all the breakdown of like five different timelines of dates that like, press release needs to be in by this date. I want images or pieces to me the month ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like we're sending out that collector's preview the Monday before the show, press release 2 weeks out. I need image, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I have like really aggressive timelines for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I basically just went ahead and, you know, booked most of the shows or I'm pretty much booked for both galleries for next year in the hopes that people start working on stuff now. So that way they have like a year, like how Musée did. And a couple other people I've worked with in the past that goes really well. It helps out a lot. But yeah, I mean, I worked for all these galleries in the Bay Area, right? So yeah. You start to learn like what you like and don't like about them.
Yeah.
How they operate, how they do press, like all these things. So when it came time to have my own spot, I was like, well, I'm going to do the opposite of pretty much like what these galleries are doing. And I'm going to take what they're doing over here and like change that and then change this. And so like by the end of it, I was just like, you know, I've done X amount of things for other people that now it's like, I'm like, I can go into a fair and like handle my shit and like be super about it and not get my stuff stolen and like be on time and not take like the gallery doesn't have to pay like X amount of extra fines and stuff. So it's just like, I've just had like a lot of just experiences that I've thrown myself in, even from back in Chicago. Like you might have like an MFA and curating or something, but like, you might not know how to hang a piece or like so do a layout or so like talk to artists about pricing or like get any press or anything.
I feel like in the art world, like experience is so valued and so undervalued in some places too. Like I know some people come out with MFAs or MAs and they're like, yeah, I'm ready to curate. And it's just like, yeah, but
you haven't done a show.
You haven't done it at all.
I don't know. It's really, it's amazing. Cause it's like running a gallery is so much more than just like, your face being like, I'm a curator and like, I'm going to put this show together with my friends and we're going to sell everything and it's going to be sick. It's not like that. Yeah. You know, it's like, it takes a lot of hard work. Like that's why I was here till like midnight, whatever with the artist. John came up from LA and dropped off his paintings after 8 hours of driving and was driving back that night. Like I only work with people that really, you know, match the drive that I put into it, you know?
You really value the hard work behind like running an art space. Like you really do, it seems.
I mean, it's the kind of the most important thing. I mean, you're providing a space for people to come learn about these individuals that you care so much about. And, you know, you're the only person that's going to do that.
Yeah.
The only person that's going to talk about them or make people feel welcome in the space. So like, doing retail and, you know, working at different clothing stores and the food industry and stuff. Now you're able to be like, when someone walks in, you can talk to them. You don't feel awkward, you know, and you should never judge a book by its cover. Cause you know, it's like had an old man come in with like Dragon Ball Z shirt and like kitty beads in his hair and dreadlocks and shit. And like he buys a $40,000 sculpture, you know, you just should never judge a book by its cover. You just never know. It's the Bay Area. Like, you know, so I think that it's just, it is super important to me, the back end of it, because I see that that's what a lot of galleries in the Bay Area lack. You know, for a lot of places, it's a 9-to-5. I'm not going to answer my emails unless it's in that time frame or whatever. But it's like, if I get a email from a collector at like
midnight from in Paris and they want to buy two pieces, like, best believe I'm going to be like responding to that immediately.
Yeah.
And making that sale before I go to bed versus like, oh, they just want it, so they'll take it in the morning, because they might not.
You yeah. know?
And so, like, again, like, that's why, like, I'm kind of like crazy. My wife thinks I'm like super insane, because she's just like, what are you doing? Are you working still? I'm like, yeah. Yeah. It's like always working. Just like, but I guess that's kind of part of being your own boss too. It's just like, no one's going to do this shit for you. You know, I don't have a staff. Like yeah. my partner at the gallery, Dan, like, yeah, I can rely on him to like come in and help, but like, is he going to be in my way at a certain point? Or is like, you know, like, cause I've forced myself to like figure sure. out how to do it by myself.
But I mean, I would assume at one point though, God willing, if you end up growing more and more,
yeah,
you would.
Sure. I mean, yeah, and yeah. that's what First Amendment's been really great about. It's like they had a staff already in play.
Yeah.
So I just got to like, I'm learning how to play well with others in the sense that like, I don't feel like I'm learning how to like release responsibility.
Sure.
And be like, cool, like I don't have to like negotiate if we're gonna frame these pieces or like flights or whatever, like they can handle that, like yeah. I just got to make sure that like I have a show booked and like that's gonna be there at a certain time and I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna install it and
yeah.
document it and do what I need to do. I don't have to babysit there every day and like talk to every single person that comes in, even though I'd love to. It's just that like I gotta set up this other show on the other side of the bay. And so it's just like, yeah, I am definitely learning how to, but I'm so particular, man. Like, I've worked with so many other interns and stuff when I was an intern that I'm just like, yo, like, what is it? Like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I'm not confident in today's, like, youthful creative working class, I guess, because everybody wants to, like, you know, smoke weed and like chill and like take their time and think about shit too long. And it's just like, you know, it's like I probably smoke more than all of you and then I'm still gonna like get this shit done, you know. It's just yeah. like I don't know, it's just weird, man. Like I just don't have a lot of faith. Like I've had some really good interns that I'm just like, damn, like I would hire, like after 1 day, 2 days of working with them, I'm like, yo, we should hire this person.
Yeah.
And there's been other people I'm like, who, like, you've been here for 3 months, like. And then they're like, yeah, that's the person that calls off all the time or whatever. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, well, maybe their head's not in the game. Like, it's amazing how many interns are like, I want to run a gallery.
Yeah.
And then they're the ones that call out most of the time or like aren't present and you stuff. Know, and it's just like,
it's crazy hearing you talk about the art community, because I think for anybody who's not in it,
sure.
You think, you know, like I give an example, some of my family members, right? They're like, oh, the art, it's just so like, free spirited and like
my mom called me a car used car salesman once. Like, I get
yeah,
it, you know?
Yeah, and then like that kind of stuff. But you know, you talking about the way you value like what kind of people you want to work with or yeah. what kind of people you want working for you. You know, I mean, it sounds like you talk about it like an actual normal business
yeah.
that needs to have hardworking employees and able to make yeah. it run. And I think people forget that part of like running not just the gallery spaces. I think it applies to museums, it applies sure. to art centers and you name it. Mm-hmm. But like it's cool. It's great to hear you to say it that way because it's true. It's truly yeah. true. Yeah.
So like there's this registrar I work with at a couple of the blue chip galleries and he's been really good to me. But I told him the first day, I was like, yo, like, I know you want us here for like 4 days. I've analyzed what we have to do. Like, we're going to get this shit done like today.
Yeah.
Like, is that cool? Like, I don't like wasting my time and just like standing around. Like, let's just do what we need to do. And like, I'm going to be gone and go do this other stuff. And he's just like, okay. He's like, I got you like, you know, it's like, I got approval for this amount of budget for like this week. And I'm like, yeah, man, like, we don't need it. And so like, you know, sometimes they kick me like a few extra hours because like they're like, all right, we got this 3 days booked out, like, you know, full days, blah blah blah. I'm like, cool, it's like 3 o'clock on the first day, like we're done, like
yeah,
I'm gonna dip. And then they'll be like, cool, add a few like few more hours to your schedule.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool, but this is like, I'm not like, I hate wasting my time. And
yeah.
So like if other people know that right from the gate, like there's no problems, you know. It's just like, hey, do you really need me right now? Because like, you know, I would love to take your money, but
yeah,
you know, if you don't need it, like, I don't want to just be like standing around waiting for people to be like, this needs to be up 2 inches. Like
yeah.
it's up, you know, and it's good. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm really big on not wasting time
at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I run my dog like twice a day versus like walking him, because I just like, I hate wasting like an hour like of walking or something. I'm like, let's just wrap this shit up. Like, let's go.
Well, dude, like the hard work is paying off, dude. I mean, you've had two shows so far, right? Mm-hmm. We're here at part two, and dude, they've been great. And I think the hard work that you put into it is visible. I mean, I'm even here looking at the show you're prepping, the next show that you're prepping. And I mean, I can see you working hard. So
yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk about what's the next show that's coming up currently. What's it titled?
In Time, and John McGee and Kelly Ordning. Two artists I've been working with for a very long time, or I guess as long as you can in 3 years of curating. Yeah. So Kelly's been a good friend since White Wall days, and John was put on to me by a few of my artists upstairs in the studios, Cannon Dill and Brett Flanagan. They're people that I think work really well together, color palettes. They work in, you know, unique mediums. You know, the display of the abstract is really unique. It's really hard to explain John's work until you kind of see it. But yeah, I mean, it's really, really easy to get lost in their work. And so, yeah, they're going to be up here. It's going to open on May 12th. It'll be on view, through June, the first Friday. And then, yeah, we have, again, all the, this year booked up monthly exhibitions. Really looking forward to kind of, you know, giving people, the local people, more room and, you know, identity behind their work by promote, like, showing it.
Yeah.
And putting it up on the walls instead of going with, like, someone from out of town that's going to draw, like, five people to their show.
Yeah.
Or something. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's important to bring in people from outside. But, you know, finding that balance, that's what Athenbee and a lot of my galleries are. It's, like, a balance between the local and then, like, the national and international folks. But, yeah, so.
Great, man. Well, thanks for coming on, dude. It was great talking to you, and hopefully maybe I'll have you back on to check in and promote some other show you got coming on.
Hopefully I didn't butcher everybody's names too bad and didn't ramble too much.
No, not at all, man. All right, thanks. All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Brock for coming on. The current show up at Part 2 Gallery, titled In Time, is open through June 1st, but starting June 9th, a new show will take its place, titled Coffee for 8, and will run till July 6th. For more information about both shows, visit Part 2's website at part2gallery.com. And over at First Amendment, a new show titled One Trick opens on Saturday, June 2nd, and runs till the 22nd. Visit firstamendmentgallery.com for more info on that show. Also, be sure to follow both galleries on Instagram at part2gallery and at First Amendment. Finally, please leave a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts, as it helps the pod get more exposure. Or like it on Instagram at artscenepc. All right, till next time.